Namaste and welcome to the Wednesday 10 p.m. show. And we have, of course, Sri Vibhuti Jha. And today we have also Abhijit Iyer Bitra. And I know that you've been very impatient. You've been wanting him to come to this show for a long time. Finally, he is here. And he's coming straight back from... Are you coming back from Taiwan or from Riyadh?
For me?
Yes.
From Botswana.
Okay.
Botswana, okay.
That's why you're looking so haggard. Now, let me start with a very simple and straight question. Who's given the greater bamboo to our old Joe? China or Saudis?
I would have to say the Saudis. See, the Chinese, they don't know how to give bamboo properly. You know, it's the case of poverty amidst plenty. You know, that economic complex we always read about. Jahan market oversaturate ho jata hai. To uski tarah, the problem with the Chinese is they throw a lot of tantrums and then they have to back down. Everybody thought that they were going to attack. They create this impression over and over again. And, you know, then they end up looking stupid when they do nothing. On the other hand, the Saudis have inflicted clear, present and serious damage on the US economy. And all for what? Because of a moralistic position over the death of one journalist. Now, we're always told that, you know, relationships between countries are institutional. Individual actions shouldn't affect them. Yet, because this man needs the validation of the Washington Post, he very stupidly and foolishly decided to make pariahs out of the Saudis. And look how they've screwed him over. You know, they refuse to go along. They're refusing to break ties. They're refusing to impose sanctions on Russia. They're refusing to pump more oil and bring inflationary pressures down. And here's the thing, why should Saudi Arabia pump more oil to bring inflationary pressures down when the American government is refusing to give local oil producers returns on investment if they invest in increasing capacity or allow them to frack and things like that? So it's, you know, he's fighting too many battles on the same front. And I think the Saudis have exploited it in a much, much more sophisticated, intelligent way, which is why he had to go with a begging bowl in hand to Saudi Arabia than the Chinese have.
So, Vibhuti ji, there is a supplementary to you. Why doesn't old Joe allow fracking?
Old Joe is, you know, He has been installed as a president at the behest of some certain lobbies. So if you look at his body language, and I have been observing that part very clearly, his body language is clearly, I don't give a damn. I'm not using the SHIT word, but I just used. He doesn't give a damn for anything. He is doing what he has been told to do. That's why the moment he came to power, he shut down everything. Energy independence of the United States and created a dependency. Now, and then he was using the word pariah and teach lessons and all that kind of stuff. The Democratic Party, unfortunately, has had a tradition with Saudi Arabia. It was Obama who propped up Iran. Although he also was snubbed by MBS. The issue is very clear. Somewhere along the line, they were never been quite good friends. They have always been a tactical and transactional relationship. Oil was the key. And Biden is playing into their hands. Whichever lobby is pushing him to act the way he's doing, everything that he's doing, it's not Joe Biden that people know or knew. But he is doing things which are definitely clearly against American interest itself. You know, one of the things about happens, the clash of civilization, as they say, that there is a power vacuum and then you begin to give into authorities and institutions that are not working well. He's hurting the American institutions so badly that even Democrats are angry about it. So Biden is weak. I have my prediction, second State of the Union address, he will move. And all the manipulations that are going on to make sure that somehow they retain the midterm election, Senate and Congress, so that he will quit and somebody else will come. There is a lot of back the, behind the scene going on. He is physically incapable, and presidency makes you old very quickly. So Biden is weak, absolutely no doubt about that. Think about it like this. 8 out of 10 Republicans who voted for impeachment of Trump have lost the primaries to Trump candidates, including Liz Cheney. it's something very interesting thing happening. And Democrats are trying to bring Trump in the race because Trump somehow unites the Democrats more than anything else. That's the game plan going on. I think, in my opinion, apart from being a Republican candidate in this assembly election, you know my view. Biden is a weak candidate, very weak for the country.
Okay, so I go back to Abhijit. So with this background, where do you place the Pelosi visit to Taiwan?
So, look, this, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that, you know, Biden, especially Hunter, his son, is compromised to several Chinese companies. And there's more evidence of that than there ever was against anything that they ever hurled at Trump. Just like, you know, for example, there was more evidence that Hillary Clinton took home classified documents than Trump ever did. But they will raid Trump's house. They will never raid Hillary Clinton's house. And they'll exonerate her for deleting emails on her computer, which she had no business doing. So what happens in all of this is some kind of a weak attempt at looking tough. And, you know, the Democrats have a long history of this. Because if you remember Bill Clinton, he used to keep accusing George Bush Sr. of being too soft on China. And when he came to power, he went all out with China. Obama used to accuse George Bush Jr. of, he used to keep saying that China is the main threat. And George Bush's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan had diverted attention from that. And when he comes to power, he comes up with the G2, which was essentially replacing the duopoly of America and the USSR with America and China. The Chinese didn't want it. That's a different matter. Then he came up with something called the Asian pivot. And everybody went gaga over the Asian pivot, except if you actually read what the Asian pivot says, they moved away from a set of island chains 500 to 600 kilometers away from the Chinese coast. They moved back to about 1,000, 1,100 kilometers. Right? So the Democrats have a long history of talking tough on China and bending over for China. Okay? Their mouth says something else. Their actions say something else. The Republicans are very consistent that China is a threat. Sometimes they're not on the ball, but they're very consistent about it. So in this was essentially Nancy Pelosi trying to play the same game. And it was also Biden playing the same game because his son is so compromised. If he had gone, he wouldn't know what the Chinese would do to his son, what kind of information they'd put out there. So Pelosi is a very convenient scapegoat to send and show that the Democratic Party is being tough without, you know, having more embarrassing tapes about his son come out.
Okay. You want to ask anything, Vibhuti?
Yes, I want to ask him something very specific, Abhijit, that, you know, you refer to Clinton, Hillary Clinton scenario, and if the Queen was coronated in 2016, this country would have already become a socialist country, but it didn't happen. But the play, the word play in English that happens is absolutely shocking, and that makes people disgusted. So the FBI chief at that time, if he had used the word gross negligence for Hillary Clinton's actions, she would have been charged and probably gone through the grill. But he used the word extreme carelessness. Now, we can debate all day long what is the difference between extreme carelessness and gross negligence, but we know what exactly the whole thing is. So you are right. Hunter is so badly compromised that the United States sent millions of barrels to a Chinese company of oil to Chinese company at the instance of Hunter Biden. No media talks about it. The whole world knows about it. So my question here is that Saudi Arabia and China both have a fear of sanction, real or imaginary, or whether it will happen or not, I do not know. That one common clause, human rights violations. And is this particular fear of sanction which US imposes, which nobody likes, I also don't like that, because I have said that US imposes sanctions, better beware if other countries begin to sanction you. That's an issue that needs to be talked about. How do you see this jumping into the whole bandwagon as a de-dollarization program with the Russia sanction happening?
So, you know, the strange thing was, let's wind back a bit to how the EU started, which America was extremely supportive of. You know, at that point, Germany was the pariah. Germany has been the aggressor. I mean, Hitler and all of that. So what had happened was the EU started with a very important win-win formula. What the Germans required was rehabilitation. And what the rest of the Europeans required was Germany to be, sorry to use the word, but castrated. And the EU did both. It rehabilitated Germany back into a European whole. And at the same time, it removed, by nationalizing coal and steel of all the European countries, it essentially castrated not just Germany, but it castrated the whole of Europe's war-making ability in a sense, because your coal and steel at that point of time were key to war-making. Now, this principle was never followed with Russia. When a country has, you know, security interests, the point of the EU is to accommodate. It is always to find a win-win solution, not a my way or the highway kind of a solution. So now, coming to what America has now done, there was a time when America understood the value of global cooperation, like, you know, it fostered the EU. It encouraged the EU. Even when it didn't get along, it would encourage the EU to do certain things. They wanted the EU to become stronger, 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 because they felt their security also grew with that, and they were right. The problem for quite some time has been that America has wanted to have an enemy. There was a whole industry built up on the USSR being the enemy. And those people did not want to refocus on China, because China is a much tougher nut to crack. Most of them are compromised to China because, you know, most think tanks get funding or have interests in China directly or indirectly, one way or the other. And so America faced this kind of dual, what India faces in a sense. China is the bigger threat, but Pakistan is the immediate threat. So for them, Russia is, they created Russia into a Pakistan, essentially. The immediate threat, but not the bigger threat. They were wrong. Because it turns out Russia is not those single product economies which you get away with sanctioning and they just crush and crumble. Russia is holding out fantastically well under sanctions. Well, I mean, it's not like there's not been damage. There's been huge damage, but they're holding out very well. They're damaging the rest of the country's economies. Now, the problem is, as resilient as Russia is, for the rest of the world, they're thinking, who the hell is Ukraine? What the hell is Ukraine? And how can you go around destroying the common goods that have been created over the last 75, 80 years over an invasion of an irrelevant country that no country outside of Europe seems to give a rat's ass about? I mean, you go to anybody in India, ask them, do you even know where Ukraine is? Unless you're studying medicine and have an ambition to go to Ukraine to get your medical degree, you won't know where it is. Most Japanese don't know where Ukraine is. Southeast Asia doesn't know where Ukraine is. When it was put to the vote at the UN General Assembly, sure, numerically speaking, more countries voted to condemn Russia. But if you look at the countries that abstained or supported Russia, they account for 55% of the world's population. Right? Now, you are wasting all the international goods you've created. SWIFT transfers, dollar as a global reserve currency, the notion of international your savings and things like that, to go around seizing them, to seize investments and assets like Russian oligarchs and things like that. Everybody now has a huge question mark, not because America has done this. Remember, they did it to Iraq as well when Iraq invaded Kuwait. But does America even know what it is doing? Because that did not hurt anybody. This hurt everybody. For that was done for Kuwait, which significantly affected oil production, and therefore the victim hurt everybody. Ukraine counts for nothing. So the victim in this case, nobody gets affected by the victim being dismembered or gobbled up. So in any cost-benefit analysis, no country outside of Europe, which is consumed by its own moral superiority, seems to get what all these things are for. And that is obviously because it calls into question the wisdom and ability of a leadership that governs the global commons to do a cost-benefit analysis and to take into account the common good. And that is going to be the primary driver. Like they say, business confidence. There is such a thing as political confidence, a trust in America to take the right decisions. That is completely gone.
Right. And you didn't talk about the de-dollarization.
The de-dollarization is exactly what is going to happen. When the trust goes away, everybody is going to start moving away from the dollar. Look, there were other things that were going to lead to de-dollarization. The fact that you now have your debt to equity ratio is so high. I don't know how America is even going to recoup that. What is it, Vibhuti? It's like 13:1 or something like that, ratio.
Yeah. It is ridiculous.
It's obscene.
Yeah.
So there were certain things which were anyway going to happen. But when you add this sort of lack of confidence in the political sagacity of a leadership, where it is driven by talking points and extraordinary self-harm, every country then starts to lose faith. Remember, the British pound once was, nobody thought the British pound could be challenged. And overnight, within the space of 10, 12 years, the dollar just replaced it internationally as the reserve currency. What you're seeing is the beginning of the end of de-dollarization. The question is, I still don't think you're going to de-dollarize completely, because what is the alternative? The dollar provided a fantastic alternative to the British pound. But what is the alternate to the dollar today? So there has to be the right replacement candidate for that de-dollarization to happen. But has there been trust lost in the dollar? Yes. So yeah. Will de-dollarization happen? Yes. The question is, what will we de-dollarize for?
There's also this talk about the BRICS countries coming together and floating a currency. Do you think it is workable?
Sir, you tell me what BRICS country has any kind of value, sir. What you're telling, man? Like China currency, you trust and all, very good for you. yellow, yellow, dirty fellow. Okay, India currency, my Draghi also not trust. Okay, if you go, you tell me who trusts Indian currency. There is not a single smart fiscal policy we take for anybody to trust Indian policy. Are you going to trust the Brazilian real? Really? You're going to trust Brazil? No chance. Are you going to trust Russian financial currency? No. इसमें साउथ अफ्रीका, साउथ अफ्रीका में राइट्स होके पूरा मेल्टडाउन हो रहा है, आप साउथ अफ्रीकन करेंसी को ट्रस्ट करोगे? नहीं. सो सी यू नो दिस वाज अ जोक दैट वाज मेड अबाउट आई थिंक इट वाज गमाल अब्दुल नासर हु सेड इट अबाउट द ऑर्गेनाइजेशन ऑफ अरब स्टेट्स और इट वाज ईदर अयूब खान और जमाल अब्दुल नासर हु सेड इट अबाउट द अरब स्टेट द ऑर्गेनाइजेशन ऑफ इस्लामिक कॉन्फ्रेंस 50 कंट्रीज. He said the sum total of 50 zeros is zero. So, you know, sum total of 5 zeros is also zero.
You don't think it's a 5 zeros because I think you are...
zero or 1.5, 0.5, 0.0005,
what difference? That's okay. But then we have seen that how when the war started, the Ukraine war started, at that time... they squeezed Russia really hard. And then they got Russia to the point that the ruble depreciated from something like 78 to 140. And then they started...
it is now its strongest.
Then they started saying that you have to buy our goods only in rubles. And
yes,
it appreciated to something like 52. Right now, I think it's about 58, 60 right now. Something like that.
It's at its best performing rate for a long time.
That's right.
But see, there are two things. One is
Let me complete. So, I think Russia did show a way forward, don't you think? And
no.
Countries that's like Russia and China, because China also has such a huge exports, they can also do the same.
No.
Maybe India is not in a position to do it at this point. But then these two countries, they have the goods and they have the robustness to actually deal with the other countries on their own term.
No, they do not. No, they do not. And I'll tell you why. See, okay. This is like Vietnam. Okay, Vietnam, tiny country, so strong that it defeated the French, it defeated the Chinese, and then it defeated the Americans. But has it been able to create global norms or any global institution or body? No. So look, Russia can play a fantastic destroyer anywhere. China can play a fantastic destroyer anywhere. But what are you actually able to create? Therein lies the problem. Do you trust Chinese financial instruments for all the ability? Sure, if you do to China what you've done to Russia, I would say the level of global trade disruption and inflation and things like that would be many magnitudes greater. It would be orders greater. Fine, I accept that. But can China create? Because remember, the Chinese economy is fundamentally in deeper doldrums than the American economy. You look at the train system, it's a fantastic unrecoverable debt of some $800-900 billion, close to $1 trillion. The infrastructure debt, unrecoverable infrastructure debt, would be another few $1 trillion. A lot of China's economy is just plain bankrupt. Now, they were fantastic in getting, rating agencies in the... they faced bankruptcy before. They game the system, telling rating agencies to buy certain things or recommend buying certain things and recapitalize. This time, remember, at that time, the West had money to buy. This time, the West does not have the money to buy. They're too deep in debt. So that recapitalization option, that window of recapitalization, does not exist. So again, China may play a great Vietnam, very stout, strong, a disruptor. Russia, great disruptor. Creator, no. You need a creator. For a global standard currency, you do need a creator.
That brings me to a very important point here. And you brought in that, creator, disruptor, yes, creator, no. and political and economic, do we see, Abhijit, a vacuum emerging in the world which is creating tremendous amount of uncertainty? That vacuum, power vacuum of any kind, economic or political vacuum, that is what causes the collapse of the system, because nobody is able to look up to anything or anyone. Look at Xi and look at Biden. Two contrasting personalities. Both of them don't know what they are doing. I mean, I'm particularly surprised about Xi. Doesn't he realize ever, or does anybody tell him, that that country and Xi are the most hated men around the world? The entire hate is emanating of their killer contracts, the way they subjugate people, the way they dominate with their sovereign fund and make others slaves. Look at the word slavery is coming in the play. Whether you like it or not, Pakistan ko to slave bana ke kya kya nahi kiya wahan pe. Barbaad ho gaya. So my point is power vacuum? Who will fill the vacuum? And that's where the question comes in, whether US is hurting itself through sanctions and it is, Russia is gaining out of the sanction. And I will come to the European part later.
I think the closest I've seen to this is the conflict, almost 1,000-year conflict between Rome and Persia. Rome was mostly the ascendant. Persia, you would ascend every now and then. Persia being China, Rome being America. Rome had a much greater impact on global thinking than arguably Persia did. and what happened was, in those, not thousand, but say about 700 years of fighting between the two, it was the Arabs suddenly who come out of nowhere, out of the desert, from a little town called Mecca, which was unheard of by everybody else at that point of time. And they smash Persia, they smash Egypt, they smash the Byzantine Empire, and they just take over everything. So right now we're in that situation where it's kind of one basket case with a 13:1 debt to equity ratio, and another basket case with a God knows what kind of failed economic model, which we can't tell because of all the secrecy and the hiding and things like that. I think what we'll see is a short-lived flash of brilliance from somebody else. But I don't think China is going to be the end of America or America is going to be the end of China. I don't see who this flash is going to come from. Who is going to be the proverbial Arab? I don't know. But I don't think she is able to take on America or America she. And to answer your question, no, she does not realize this. So one of the things I remember, you know, with the previous president was, look, there's always been thought and speech controls in China. But in private, think tankers used to be able to, you know, voice their concerns about policy. They were even allowed to criticize policy up to a point. But once she came, she is probably more powerful than Mao Zedong even was in terms of the amount of party power that he has accumulated around himself. And one of the things is today, all my think tank friends, they're too scared to even criticize him in private. They don't know, even if it's interpreted as criticism, if it may not be, they and their families will be thrown in jail. So he's created a closed information loop where nothing negative is really reaching him. And see, that's the beginning of the end of you dictators usually. Because remember, Mao himself was sidelined not once, but on two separate occasions from the party. And then he had to do the Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward to get back his prominence in the party. Why? Because there was a certain kind of a feedback mechanism. With Xi Jinping, there is nothing. So there's nobody telling him. He's going on repeating mistake after mistake. See, this One Belt, One Road and his great love for One Belt, One Road. Where does this infrastructure bankruptcy start? It starts with that economic crisis of 2008, which we know from the Great Depression governments have to spend their way out of a depression. They've got to create that demand to work you out of a depression. The problem is China did that, but they didn't stop. They got so addicted to that kind of spending, they just went on spending on useless crap, which got them bankrupted. Here, what's happening is Xi is still not learning. Obor, One Belt, One Road, BRI, call it what you will. I mean, call it XYZ for all I care. Because, you know, they keep renaming it every 4 or 5 years. But this Obor thing, it has anybody ever seen a cost-benefit analysis? We've been asking our Chinese interlocutors for years, show us a cost. We've asked for Hambantota. We've asked for Sri Lanka's waterfront. We've asked for Gwadar. Not once have we seen even a back of paper calculation on the profitability of a single one of these projects. So nobody, to answer your question very directly, she is not even thinking about it because she is like Rahul Gandhi. Rahul Gandhi is not on Twitter, so he doesn't hear what people are calling him to his face, in fact, not even behind his back. And all the sycophants surrounding him are telling him if he says alu, sona, instead of saying, tu kya ulu ka patha hai, they actually go say, sir, ye aapne kya bol diya, ye to dusra Bhagavad Gita hai, ye to dusra Rig Ved hai. So this is exactly what is happening in China. Xi Jinping is the Rahul Gandhi of China. Okay. That was a horrible below the belt insult to Xi Jinping. I apologize. Xi Jinping is much better than Rahul Gandhi, but
I remember,
not that much better.
I remember you saying that Xi is the most stupid leader to have ever come out of China in the last 200 years.
Genuinely. In India's great strategic weakness is its prime minister's ego. India's greatest strategic strength is Xi Jinping's stupidity.
Viewers, please do not forget to ask questions. Start shooting your questions. Yes, Vibhutiji, you seem to be wanting to ask something.
No, I was wanting to, because there was an earlier reference to EU and Europe and things like that. So I wanted to say about Ukraine. You know, I had said earlier that Europe has a penchant for playing their own internal melodramatic territorial adjustments from time to time. And Ukraine is one such, the latest one. Yugoslavia disappeared, Czechoslovakia disappeared, Russia, USSR broke up, German unification, Italian unification. And history is a big teacher. Both Hitler and Napoleon were to commit the same mistake of going into Russia in the Russian winter. Having said that, Europeans are able to somehow, somewhere along the line, convert their local issue in a global problem. You know, Ukraine, global food shortage, global this, global that. And I think the rest of the world has reacted very correctly, as Abhijit, you told earlier on, that countries give a damn about it. It is a local issue, let them handle it, and we stayed out of it. My question here is NATO. NATO unites majority of the Europeans. Isn't it a white boys' club? White boys' fight club, where they all assemble together. There's no such organization anywhere in the world. If Z were smart, and I'm willing to agree with you on that very happily, that Z is definitely stupid. He would have come to India, made peace with India, and said, let's create a Pacific Treaty Organization. Exact opposite of NATO. Why not? Is this time for the rest of the world to ask NATO to be disbanded instead of being a white man's club? And that too for only war purposes, Clause 5?
Remember, this isn't the first time white people behave. See, white people seem to think historically that they have something unique to give the rest of the world. Be it religion, be it ideas, whatever. You know, usually what happens at these track two meetings is Europeans happily will tell you that Europe is the empire of norms. They actually say it. They don't even, they're not even being, specious or anything like that. They genuinely mean it. They believe they are the empire of norms. And the Indian side will usually respond and say, more like the world's biggest open-air museum. Now, they don't seem to get that everybody is laughing at them. Right, this is like, what was that fellow who used to take himself very seriously?
You're talking about
Lalu Yadav? No, but see, Lalu Yadav knew he was funny. And Lalu Yadav actually, was funny. He was genuinely funny.
If I might interrupt, every Bihari thinks that way.
What? Lalu Yadav?
Yeah, but no. see, there are two things. So do you remember that famous episode of Lalu in Tokyo? When Lalu landed up in Tokyo, you know, the Japanese said, sir, give us Patna for 2 years and we'll make it look like Tokyo. And without batting an eyelid, he turned around and told them, you give me Tokyo for 2 days and I'll make it look like Patna. Lalu knew he was being funny. Do you remember his famous speech in Parliament? I grow tree. I grow fruit tree. Fruit tree give fruit. He knew how to game. Because remember, he is actually a horrible, horrible man. He's a criminal. He's very affable and a great sense of humor, but that hides the fact that people still remember what a nightmare Bihar was under him.
Yeah.
Most of it done by him, by his associates. Murders, rapes, killing, God knows what not.
That's right.
I would say this is the anti-Lalu. The European Union is the anti-Lalu. They think they're being very serious. They don't realize that they're a sad, pathetic joke. You look historically, they think Christianity is a gift that they have to give everybody because you're going to go to hell unless you accept the Lord Jesus Christ in your heart. Of course, that Jesus was a Jew, they didn't care about. They were killing their own Jews. The people who actually followed the path that Jesus followed, they were killing them while proclaiming Jesus to the rest of the world. So, this is what they did with Jews and Jesus is exactly what they do with the sovereignty of countries and Russia. They will invade, they will bomb Syria, they will invade Libya, they will invade Iraq. But they will go preach to everybody else, please do not invade and annex. Right? So this Jew, the pogroming of Jews versus the propagation of Jesus is the same that they do today. The invasion of countries while preaching to others, do not invade countries. They take themselves seriously, and I think they've realized, because nobody realistically has gone along with their sanctions, they realize that they are not what they think they are. If you go to places like the Munich Security Conference, you just sit around thinking, what a bunch of self-obsessed wankers. Nobody gives a shit about you. I mean, as a continent, you are the dirtiest continent who don't even wash your own buttocks after taking a crap in the morning. Would you ever take anybody who didn't wash their buttocks seriously? I wouldn't.
But, what do they do in the US, Vibhuti-ji?
No, but they made the world to take them seriously, right? Think about it. The two world wars were essentially European mainland conflicts.
Yes, and we study about them.
And Indian soldiers and many other countries lost their lives. They called it World War, which was essentially a European conflict. And that's what the world has now become aware of, that these Europeans are the root cause. Their imperialism and colonialism is the root cause of all flashpoints in the world today. All flashpoints in the world today are the direct outcome of European imperialism. So somewhere along the line, we as a nation, say India as a nation, I'm an American now, but I am all for India. India, China, other countries must stand up to what you earlier called the European game plan. How does that happen, or will it ever happen?
Again, it's a question of there's too much mistrust amongst everybody else to, like we discussed with dollarization, right? You might have lost trust in the dollar, but where do you have trust to replace the dollar?
Right.
So everybody now thinks that the EU is a sad, pathetic joke, but you also think that India is a lightweight, an intellectual and a physical lightweight, that China is extremely dangerous. The rest don't really count for much. So who then is going to take the lead in this thing of saying enough Occidentalism? It's now time to devolve into a multipolar world where each sphere creates its own, not just sphere, each continent creates its own set of norms. And that sadly isn't happening. Because remember, at some level, and I think people tend to underestimate this, this has become a lot worse with Democrats and the left-wing swing of Democrats. Democrats take their talking points from the European left. The European left ideal is the ideal that Democrats want to emulate in America, be it in terms of healthcare, social security, whatever, whatever, whatever. You look at it, it's a literal talking points of you know, a Christian socialist or an SD or a CS kind of parties that you would have in Europe. So it's essentially a huge part of America seeks Europe's validation. And as long as America controls the world economy, and Europe also is a very huge part of that economy, I don't think we're going to see any major disruption to their continued dominance of the discourse.
Okay, so I think it's time to move to the question answer session. And before that, I have to request everybody to please like the video, share the video, subscribe the channel, and of course, do help us with some small donations.
One quick clarification. Mandar Karnik asked CDU or SDU. Neither. Christian Democrats, no. Christian Socialists and Social Democrats. Those would be left-wing. Those are generic descriptions. They're not German CDU, SDU and things like SDP and things like that.
Please go to the description and you click at the link and you will reach the page, your subscription.